You're listening to the Healthcare Goes Digital podcast. Get ready to be inspired as we explore provocative topics surrounding innovative technologies and ideas with top industry professionals, digital entrepreneurs, and provocateurs. At Impetus Digital, we believe that everything starts with a conversation. We aspire to act as the bridge to not only ignite these courageous conversations, but to also sustain them over time. We do this through our Insight platform, which features our award-winning Insight events and Insight Touchpoint solutions, and through these fireside chats. In the end, our hope is to collectively and positively disrupt healthcare. Let's get started with your host, Natalie Eden, CEO and co-founder of Impetus Digital, an all-in-one, fully serviced virtual collaboration and communication solution for online meetings, events, conferences, and advisory boards for life science companies.
Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Eden. I'm the CEO and co-founder with Impetus Digital. At Impetus Digital, we've built some of the best-in-class asynchronous and synchronous virtual collaboration tools and services to help pharmaceutical companies have collaborations, investigator meetings, medical education, various types of virtual events that they can do touchpoint by touchpoint over the course of the year so they can work with payers, physicians, allied healthcare providers, patients, and everybody in between so they can do their work both virtually, hybrid, as well as in person. And we actually bolster our platform with a series of professional white glove services. But more importantly at Impetus, we really believe that everything starts with a conversation. And from some of these big, hairy, audacious conversations with some of the leading edge thinkers, some of the digital provocateurs, and the healthcare thought leaders, is we can all work together to collectively and positively disrupt healthcare. So I'm super excited about having one of these provocative thought leaders at the table with me today. This is actually Dr. Itai Dayan. He's actually the CEO of a company called Rhino Health. Dr. Itai Dayan is transforming the way healthcare AI solutions are created, adopted, as well as measured. Drawing on his background as a clinician, as well as a researcher, Itai is passionate about creating equitable access to advanced AI-based diagnostics and treatment pathways, so across an increasingly diverse patient populations. So prior to co-founding Rhino Health, Itai served as an executive director at Mass General Brigham, where he led the Center for Clinical Data Science. There, he oversaw the development of over 20 clinical applications using AI and collaborated closely with health and technology leaders on R&D projects designed to accelerate the adoption of new AI-based healthcare solutions. And before that, he held managerial roles at Boston Consulting Group, focused on go-to-market transformation for biopharma, biotech, and digital health companies operating in today's value-based healthcare ecosystem. Itai earned his MD and his Bachelor's of Science from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and he studied at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome, Itai. So happy to have you on the show.
Very happy to be here today.
It is quite an outstanding background that you have, being a physician, you know, getting your MD, then getting into the whole entrepreneurial space, getting into AI. Can you maybe start off just giving us a high-level overview of your background and your career trajectory?
Well, I'd say that starting medical practice, I had a strong determination to be somewhat the cutting edge of medicine and help transform the way medicine is done. I tried to do that for advising innovative companies at BCG. I then wanted to get my hands dirty and actually develop AI and deploy AI in a hospital setting. And I ultimately realized that main gap today in the market is platforms that can enable the flow of data and the flow of insights, which today don't exist. The healthcare IT market remains very siloed. It's difficult to access data. It's difficult to create products that would generalize and scale well. And that's a problem that Rhino Health comes to solve.
So love to dig into that. So Rhino Health is an amazing new company that's using some really interesting AI algorithms, machine learning. You gave us a little bit of the problem statement of why you started Rhino Health. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the company does and how you founded it?
So my motivation to start Rhino comes from a project that I led just before starting the company, which was called the Exam Study, in which we took 20 medical institutions worldwide and collaborated on creating a COVID diagnostic model that used data from all of these institutions without sharing data. The technology that enabled us to do that is called federated learning, in which an AI model would train locally at each hospital's data, what's called on the edge, and then a federated orchestrator would merge the parameters from the different models into one kind of global master model. That would work better than any of the local models, yet not require the transfer of any raw data in order to train it. It's a bit of a complicated concept, but I would, just as an example, it's also used in different industries, such as autonomous vehicles that need to train and refine algorithms that work on the car itself without transferring massive amounts of video data over the network. And it also works in cellular phones when your autocorrect gets smarter over time without you directly sharing any of your text messages with the company who's supplying the the solution, like Apple or Android or etc. So the role of Rhino is bringing this distributed, privacy-preserving concept into healthcare data.
So if I was actually a big hospital or a big, with several institutions involved, and we wanted to protect this data, there's a lot of concerns about privacy for patient information. So you're suggesting that I would want to get involved with this because I could keep that information private while at the same time using this edge computing, edge AI, machine learning to utilize or to have access to the federated learning that comes from so many other colleagues in other institutions, so I can keep my data, but also have access to the smarter, bigger data. Is that technically what we're looking at?
So we don't promise anybody to use all of the data on the network. You need to make friends. You need to collaborate with people. But we make these collaborations way easier and require less labor, less risk, and less cost.
I totally get what you're saying. So there's still technically silos, but it removes some of the risk associated and enables the collaboration between different data sets.
Yep. It's a collaborative tool, like GitHub is to coding, Rhino is to data.
Got it. Beautiful. So we talked a little bit about hospitals. I'm assuming that hospitals and also pharmaceutical industry, et cetera, could also leverage the Rhino Health platform. Tell us a little bit about what some of these collaborations or these stakeholders then get involved in, and how do they use the information?
So today we have collaborations coming from either academic institutions who have developed cancer diagnostics and different vascular health diagnostics, and then use the platform in order to make the algorithms more robust and generalizable using a large network of collaborators. We also have pharma companies and companies that support pharma companies using our system to extract deeper data insights using different data management systems from around the world without having to share the data itself. And we also help some organizations federate their own data. So I may be a company that has international presence. It could be a healthcare organization, can be a pharmaceutical industry, can be an IT implementation company. And I'm connecting between my data assets in different places in a way that kind of like feels like it's centralized, but it actually isn't. And helping in that way solve a lot of the regulatory compliance issues and the cost issues around migrating data, like collaborating between GDPR and HIPAA regions, or collaborating with different interpretations and different other local regulatory schema in Far East Asia, in the UK, in Israel, in North America and South America and beyond.
Beautiful. So many different use cases, if you will, they're basically incalculable, probably the number of advantages and uses. One that comes to mind are traditional things like data registries and the ability to do data discovery. Tell us a little bit about how Rhino Health enables these components.
So that's a great question. Data registries Rhino can be either a complement to, meaning you may already have a centralized data registry, but when you want to expand your search and glean additional insights from additional data modalities, you could use that index in order to discover more data and then work on that data. Like, for example, taking a patient registry that's built on very structured data and then add to that imaging data. Another example is our data registry with Asuta Hospital in Israel that has massive amounts of endoscopy and surgical and different surgical data, which can be queried from an online tool that's privacy preserving. But then when you know that the right data exists, then you can ask to actually work on that data and you can run that entire process without requiring direct access to the data at any given step. Another way is to look at it as a way to build new registries from scratch and alleviate the need to centralize so much data. Some of these registries, for example, could have better lineage back to the electronic medical record, could have ability to rediscover the identity by the hospital based on need. Like, for example, I've identified patients who may be a higher risk of having a complication, and I'd like to inform the doctors. That's something that today closing that loop is incredibly complicated with the thread, kind of like chain of custody that data takes until it's made available. In terms of discovering data, our platform is ultimately what you make of it. You can bring in your own custom software from command line code to complicated software with GUI, and you can run them on the edge. So if you have data discovery tools like using NLP on clinical notes or doing more structured search on DICOM imaging data, you can do that using the platform. And a pretty cool thing is that you can do that in a privacy-preserving way while the data remains on-premises or wherever the data custodian keeps it.
So you've really helped to solve some of the interoperability concerns and issues that happen, especially for third-party software developers, et cetera, who are wanting to get into the space and who are wanting to do things to disrupt healthcare and to improve it and improve healthcare outcomes. How is this being done and what is, you know, what is the outcomes or what are some of the things that you're seeing already being developed on the platform of Rhino?
So I think I mentioned earlier, we're seeing an algorithm to predict brain aneurysms that have not been detected yet. We're seeing algorithms to detect cancer earlier for cancers like pancreatic cancer, which is today a major cause of morbidity and mortality. We're seeing different ways to benchmark patient outcomes and be able to share these benchmarks based on patient characteristics rather based on which institution did the data come from. So that's another one. We've enabled recently the American College of Radiology to build distributed registries to promote women's health research on breast imaging data. Quite a lot. I could probably go into more, but to be pretty candid with you, we aren't developing any of these models and none of these are our intellectual property. We are the platform on which our bright and passionate users build, train, deploy these solutions.
So what exactly is your business model then, Itai? Let's just say I'm a big pharmaceutical company and I just launched a product, and part of my regulatory or market access requirements is to capture some real world data, real world evidence to potentially supply for some outcomes-based agreements that I may have signed up with. How do I sign up? What is the business model? How do you get paid? How does a pharmaceutical company work with you?
So from a pharmaceutical company perspective, it would be a consumption-based license. So you use few edge devices, you use many edge devices, I use a few compute cycles, use many compute cycles, the price range is based on that. And so you really pay for value, the way that we help quantify. If you need also a coordination with the data custodians in order to access the data itself, we could help with that. And we have been used as a way to harmonize contracts. It is ultimately not the main kind of mission of the company to be a data arbitrator. It is to be an enabling platform. So that's really where we shine.
Absolutely. So there would be other potential service providers, I guess, that would work in on your platform and then service, I guess, the pharmaceutical companies. Is that what the model would look like?
We absolutely have some. And while we are, you know, we don't shy away from doing anything to assist our customers, we also don't want to box out anybody. So if a hospital says, well, we only want to directly negotiate, then, you know, that's fine. And if a middleman who already has a network and already has connections wants to be, you know, continue doing that in a faster and more secure way using Rhino, that's also fine.
What about other people who are interested in this information? I'm thinking specifically about bigger systems, even like the whole market access world around payers, public and private, getting information to help do things like predictive modeling, analytics around population health management, and being able to, for example, over time, figure out where they can deploy specific centers of excellence in particular areas for higher risk groups, et cetera. What is the short to longer term play here, if you will, of stakeholders and what the data can do?
So an example for something that's already in motion is our collaboration with Maccabi Health Services, which is an integrated payer provider in Israel, and the American College of Radiology, which helps define value and helps drive reimbursements. In the longer term, I assume there will be more direct-to-payer work. I haven't seen as much as I thought I would from that sector, but I completely agree with you that the rationale is there. And I also assume that over time, as the sophistication of payers grows, the leverage of AI by payers grows, and our network expands, there will be more of that.
Absolutely. How do you measure the effectiveness of your data? So for example, if I actually came in and I'm mining some of the information, how am I notified when there's more people, there's more data to mine? How does this become a progressive process?
That's an excellent question. We've built a BI tool that allows you to register your data and connect that via the system to a privacy-preserving BI tool. So you can identify how much data there is, and has there been changes, et cetera. It's all based on the data custodian's approval. So some institutions and some companies would be more into that and some would be less into that. But I think generally most of our customers are interested in creating that transparency. And then based on that, you can actually initiate a discussion, either mediated by us or just directly. We think that's a much better version of what happens today, where you have to go through a lot of lines of bureaucracy and manual labor and, you know, et cetera, just in order to know if there's an opportunity to collaborate or not.
Absolutely. So data is the new oil. It has huge potential, but it also can be a bit of a bomb. Like there could be a lot of problems. How do you sort of manage the risks and the benefits of dealing with these data sets that could either really move in, you forward and move healthcare forward, or really explode in a negative direction?
Yeah, so first of all, we positioned ourselves not as a data broker, but rather as a platform solution to begin with. So that by itself, you know, I think has some merit to that. And, you know, ultimately, we want to be the ones supporting legitimate business transactions and, you know, benefiting from increased network activity and increased value delivered to customers rather than kind of, you know, a new federated rent seeker group. Second of all, we built our platform in a fairly simple and easy to understand architecture in a way where you have a cloud orchestrator and you have edge devices. And the edge devices sit where the data sits behind the data custodian's firewall, and data never leaves the firewall. And so even if you process data, deploy software data, and can do, frankly, quite sophisticated things with the data will never leave the firewall. And so each collaborator can know that they have the ability to, you know, based on contract, pull the plug and retain the full control over the data, which is also something that works quite well with the whole, you know, GDPR constraints, where you might at any point have somebody who wants to opt out from participation. And once you've transferred and moved out the data, you can use all sorts of contractual mechanism and some technological mechanisms. And I kind of even hear the word blockchain thrown around here and there. But ultimately, the highest certainty are that you retain full control over the data at every given moment. That's what we think is like a key tenet to that. Then, in addition to that, we built this system based on best practices with cybersecurity experts, and you know, not by happenstance, passed through ISO 27001 and SOC 2 reviews with flying colors for the first time. So we think that the whole cyber risk is very well managed. And also by maintaining the data, as stated before, you actually keep the cyber risk limited to whatever firewall the institution that shields the data has selected. So we really give them, you know, both control over the data and also understanding of how the data is protected. I'd say these are the main keys. In addition to that, we work to align ourselves with some of the top academic medical centers in the US and around the world. And we have these as kind of like our trusted advisors and, you know, keeping us on our toes in terms of what's considered as safe, what's considered as acceptable to them. And that's also helped us in the kind of a design partnership get to a product that's acceptable by a very broad range of institutions and organizations.
Absolutely. I was wondering if you could spend a couple of minutes talking about a very large study that you did called the EXAM study. It was actually published in the Nature Medicine Journal. Can you tell us a little bit about what that study said and did?
Sure. So around the beginning of the COVID pandemic, I collaborated with a laboratory in Harvard Medical School led by Kwanzeng Li to develop a COVID prognostic model, basically saying what are your risk of developing respiratory compromise, meaning breathing difficulties after 24 and 72 hours. And the goal was really to bring this into the hands of frontline clinicians as a way to assess risk and as a way to potentially even prioritize care. Or what, let's say, be another tool in their armament. We developed that on Mass General Hospital data. The algorithm worked well. It had a lot of, I'd say, good methodological thinking behind it. But we also recognize that Mass General Hospital is a fairly well-funded, well-run institution that might not be the only ones who could benefit, I'd say, from having a tool like this. And so we wanted to take that to other institutions. We recognize that going through the whole FDA 510K clearance or emergency use authorization route was beyond us, both in terms of time and resources, but we wanted to put it in the hand of other researchers and clinicians from different institutions and to let them decide if they'd like to use that or to further contribute to it. We decided to leverage NVIDIA's Clara-FL framework of that time, which has since been replaced by by NVIDIA Flare. And me with my long-time collaborator, Dr. Mona Flores from NVIDIA, as well as Dr. Holger Roth and additional folks, federated the model to 20 institutions worldwide. We discovered that within only 6 weeks, we could bring in 20 institutions. And maybe 2-3 weeks later, the project was already up and running. So in research standards, that's at the blink of the eye in terms of setting up an international collaboration with hospitals from 4 different continents. So that was a major success. We found out that the local models were very biased, but the global model was actually very robust, and we reached a fairly high area under the curve and fairly high predictive power of the model and being able to predict these. Even I'd say we've never validated it prospectively clinically, but it was definitely seemed to be in line with the best of human insight based on certain surrogates. We learned from that the concept of federation is very powerful. We also learned that there was a gap in the market, and the gap was that there wasn't a platform that would be commercially hardened and fully supported in order to enable these collaborations. So a data set which was over 16,000 patients and fairly early in the pandemic, which could have been used to further research and to potentially save lives, became inaccessible once the collaboration ended, because there wasn't anybody to kind of like keep the platform alive and force these. And we identified a lot of opportunities to add value to the actual federated learning framework with a workflow in terms of enabling different utilities beyond federated learning, like just edge compute and pre-processing data, like understanding the quality of the data that's underlying in a much better way, and different collaboration tools, which since then we've kind of like gone beyond and beyond. But, you know, that already seemed to have enough meat on the bones in order to justify and to incentivize me to leave my job, start a company, find my co-founder, Yuval Barot, who was this engineering whiz at Google, and kind of like brought a lot of this very progressive thinking from different industries into healthcare, which I also found to be one of the core tenets of the company and our success so far. And we started recruiting scientific and business talent in North America, technology and data science talent in Israel, and kind of really got the company going in the beginning of 2021.
Beautiful. So well done, and such a great view on the history of that, and really built on some fundamentally important and really impressive data. And then on top of that, you know, of course, you're building this company beyond where you are geographically, beyond Israel. Like, you're moving globally. And in fact, you've got some fantastic collaborations, one specifically with the American College of Radiology. Can you tell us a little bit about that particular collaboration?
Sure. So the American College of Radiology has built a very impressive stack of solutions to push the radiology informatics into the, you know, 21st century, and enabling all the most progressive use cases, both in terms of managing the data locally, as well as analytics toolkits on the cloud. We help for several use cases connect these technology stacks using our federated orchestrator. So we basically help expand the reach of ACR from the cloud technologies to the on-prem data management tools. I can go in the future into greater detail on, you know, the specific projects, but I can already say that we've had a very nice demonstration at the last RSNA meeting, in which we showed how a breast imaging research registry, BIRR, can be stood up in very short order and without requiring to move any data and without requiring to centralize any data.
Beautiful and very, very impressive. I love it. You really did make it very clear, Itai, that you're really trying to move away from being like a data broker to much more of a platform. And you did use the word transactions and that sort of thing. I'm wondering in the future for Rhino Health, I mean, there's probably so much more that we could talk about there, but the future potentially of putting some of this on blockchain and maybe eventually being able to enable certain owners, if you will, of data to monetize their data. What does that look like to you?
So first of all, we're not trying to move away. We never were a data broker. And so just to clarify that piece, I think the capabilities of blockchain or blockchain-like systems could definitely be helpful. I think the whole concept of auditing the use of data over a distributed network does lend itself to a distributed ledger. I think that in our immediate roadmap, there's still things to accomplish with existing supporting technology before we take a dive into the blockchain world. But I can definitely see how in a distributed and yet collaborative world, having these kinds of technologies can help even assert trust further and helping quantify value further. In regards to tell me what you did with my data, how did you do it, et cetera, and what value did you get from it? I would mention that we already offer a fully auditable log for any data activity that happens on the system. So me as a user can see who did what with the data, which models were used, et cetera, et cetera. While we also support the encryption of both the model codes and the model weights. So me as a user, I can on one hand not expose to anybody my proprietary software, yet anybody who collaborates with me would know if I used that on their data. So we found kind of like a good balance between maintaining the privacy and the ownership of IP versus understanding the usage of the data.
Well said, well said. Very exciting stuff. Super excited about Rhino Health. I am, you know, really looking forward to seeing how this is going to continue to grow and build. For anybody who's listening, who's interested in connecting with Itai, learning more about the company, connecting, collaborating, working with, please look for his contact details in the show notes below. If you enjoyed this conversation, please also check out impetusdigital.com. We have these conversations with physicians, allied healthcare providers, payers, interesting entrepreneurs like Itai to work on innovative strategies and tactics and ideas around clinical trials, investigator meetings, advisory boards, et cetera. So please check out impetusdigital.com. Please like and subscribe to our channel and please leave us some feedback on iTunes. We really appreciate everybody's time. And thank you, Itai, for an absolutely astounding conversation.
Thank you for listening to this Healthcare Goes Digital podcast. Impetus Digital are the business-to-business virtual engagement experts and provide immersive virtual collaboration and communication solutions for advisory boards, medical education meetings, events, conferences, and projects worldwide, all delivered with our award-winning white glove service. Visit us at impetusdigital.com. Or book a demo at meetwithimpetus.com to find out more. And visit us on our LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube channel to see other inspiring conversations for you to share with your network.